Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Spurs in full cry here.
Welcome, listeners, to the Extra Reach podcast. My name's Windy, and I'm joined by my psychic and best friend, Bardi. Hello, Bardi.
Good evening, Windy.
And our tactics guy, Nathan A. Clark. Hello, Nathan.
Hi, dude.
I'm going to say it again, Nathan. What the fuck was Poch thinking?
I'm not sure. When the team news came out, I tweeted that I was concerned about the lineup that we put out, and I got a lot of replies saying it's just Newcastle, it's only Newcastle, we're blowing Newcastle away, it's not a problem. And to be fair to those people, they did then come back, a lot of them, and say, oh, okay, fair enough. Yeah, I don't know. We did talk about how poor a game Eriksen had against City, but I don't think that is grounds for then dropping him. Now, obviously, that's not the full story. Obviously, there's like, and we don't really know the full extent of the situation because we're not there. We don't know what Eriksen is behaving like in training. We don't understand how that's affected the relationship between the two of them. But in my mind, if you can bring Eriksen off the bench, then you can start Eriksen. And if you're going to play a low block side, you've got to play Eriksen. Yeah. Otherwise, like, what are you doing? What's the point?
Well, the thing that struck me is we played the midfield, which didn't really work last season, but without the one thing that sort of made it almost work, which was Eriksen.
I wasn't too worried about that midfield because essentially Newcastle just surrendered that entire zone of the pitch. We could have moved it even better from midfield into attack, but basically we had control of that area and we circulated the ball from that area, but we needed that player to unlock the defence. That was it. That's the whole story of the game.
Do you agree, Bardi?
Yeah, it was Pochettino trying to fix today's problems with yesterday's team. And I just think there's certain combinations at the moment that don't work. And we should have won the game, but we didn't. And it's disappointing for those reasons. And Pochettino, for the first time in my life, first time for a while under Pochettino, I'm starting to doubt him. And I'm starting to think, what is he doing? I can't understand his thinking regarding the team and the performance.
I think that's a pretty reasonable stance, given the sort of fairly long period of lack of form and lack of good performances, aside from Champions League matches, really. And in this particular game, we had 80% possession. 80% possession, which is, it must be one of the highest ever. One of the most one-sided games ever where a team's lost, I would have thought. So 80% possession, 17 shots, 2 shots on target, and that is appalling. 2 shots on target. And an XG of 1.26.
I don't think that possession and loss that has happened in maybe 2 or 3 years. I think the last time a team with that much possession lost, it was Liverpool against Burnley a few years ago. Then that was the last time it was this kind of skewed and this team lost.
Interesting. And we had lots of questions, as you'd imagine, about individual players. Everyone's trying to blame someone for this performance. So Scott Pick 6 said, why does Sissoko start when he provides nothing of value to the team? Will Ndombele replied, you mean Lamela, right? And then Matt Jones said, why is Winks like Marmite? Is he the same player that reignited our midfield in 16-17? And I've got a bit of a take on all of this, in that we know what all three of these players do, and yet the roles we were giving them in this game weren't appropriate to what they do. So Winks is a recycler of the ball. He picks up the pieces, he moves it quickly, he starts things again. Sissoko is a transition player. He picks up on lost causes and he tries to make them into something by charging forward. Lamella will try and play off a platform, so he'll link with other midfielders and he'll try and create through quick pass and move football. But we didn't have, none of them were playing a role that suited this particular game. We had Winks essentially being asked to create from deep, and that's not good. He just doesn't do that. He was essentially asked to do stuff that Eriksen would normally do. Sissoko had no space to run into, so it was completely negated. And Lamella, okay, he tried to make things happen and lots didn't come off. So I would say he's the closest to being a reasonable pick. But he had no one to play off because none of the other players were making the kinds of movements that he would benefit from. And ultimately, we failed as a result. And that's why we had 80% possession and only two shots on target. Let's talk a little bit about what Newcastle did, though. Because this wasn't just about Spurs failing. Newcastle, they kind of, they sucker-punched us. Bardi, what did you make of that goal?
From where I was, it looked slow. It looked like there was no danger, that there was no problem on the ball. And perhaps that was reflected in the way we pressed Atsu. And it's just proper Spurs that Atsu didn't even start the game. He came on. And Atsu was once upon a time this young, wonderful talent that could have been something. Instead, now he's a Newcastle substitute who comes on and decides to do his first thing in football for half a decade. And it's against Tottenham. And
I like Atsu. I
liked Atsu as well back in the day. But
okay, fair enough.
Yeah, but he's been nobody for a while now. And there was just no press on him. No press on him. And if I'd been Atsu, I reckon I could have picked out Joe Linton with that ball. And it's just a systemic problem with Tottenham that there was no kind of drive to our play. And, you know, that was it. It was sloppy. And we gave them maybe two opportunities in that game. Both of them were really sloppy. And then that's all they needed. After that, they just packed all the spaces. Kind of like what we tried to do to Manchester City, but we were unable to. They had the discipline and they had the luck. And we missed two really good chances and they held on. And credit to them. I still think they'll get relegated because they're not going to come up against a Tottenham who's willing to hold the ball for 80% of the time. So I hope they get relegated. I never see him again. But it was sloppy and it hurt, that goal.
It did. It was painful to watch. And, you know, you've highlighted the lack of press and then the defensive response to that was really disappointed. Disappointing with Sanchez relying on Rose to pick up Joe Linton and then Rose not picking up Joe Linton. So just a complete mix-up and miscommunication between those two. And I think that is symptomatic of a lot of what we've seen this season. So we've been quite weak on that left side of our defence with either. So I think Toby played there in the first game, Sanchez in the second two, and Rose at left back, who I've been quite critical of and I thought had another pretty bad game. And actually, it was worth noting that we only had two attacking options on the bench, meaning that our final sub was to bring on Ben Davies for Rose. And I wondered whether that might be because he's thinking of playing Davies against Arsenal and wanted to get some freshness back into his legs, perhaps. Nathan, how worried about this going forward are you?
Specifically about Rose or
about this performance, this thing we're seeing at the moment from Spurs?
Well, specifically defending, like I'm not, and I said this about the Villa goal, I'm not entirely worried about conceding a decent chance over the course of 90 minutes. Yeah, Sissoko should have pressed Atsu more aggressively. Sanchez's positioning was poor. Maybe Rose's was as well, but he's 5'6", so maybe what can he do about Joe Linton? I don't know. But like, you can concede a chance a game if you score four at the other end. For me, that's the problem. And I think that I tweeted about this. I think that it's very plausible that we will overcome our attacking deficiencies over the next couple of months, whether that is because Eriksen stays and we make use of him, or whether that's because we bring through Lo Celso as his replacement. And I have said before, and I also get, I do think that Lo Celso will be something of a downgrade on Eriksen in terms of churning out the chances. But he'll certainly be a lot better than playing two wingers and just trying to cross the ball into a box with 20 players, you know, over and over again for 90 minutes.
Let's talk about that briefly, because you tweeted before the game and I responded about Son and Lucas being on the pitch at the same time. And we subsequently had lots of comments and you had a couple of DMs about it. Why do you only want one of them on the pitch at any one point?
Firstly, that's not like a hard rule. Like, certainly you're going to close out games occasionally with both those players, and like there are certain circumstances and certain formations where, like, I'm not saying that you're guaranteed to lose with both on the pitch, but I think generally these are players with quite similar skill sets who are either going to play up top or out wide, and their skills are in that they are fast runners, they have good close control, and they're good finishers, right? That's applicable for both of those players. And I think that the way that we look to provide width generally, regardless of formation, maybe not so much the case when we play back three, but generally we're playing with a winger on one side and our fullback on the other, right? And we'll switch it around, we'll move it around, but we want width from one attacking player and one fullback, right? If you're doing that, if you've got Son and Lucas on the pitch, they're both hugging the touchline a lot of the time, or they're trying to be a striker all the time. It makes a mess of it, and it's also taken away a place from a more of a passing focused player like Eriksen, who would have done us more good there. I'm not happy with how I've explained that, but
No. I think I'm with you, and I think part of the problem was essentially Lucas played up front in the space that you would want Harry Kane to be taking up, and that's because we only play with one wing on wide at any one point. And so Lucas is playing through the middle. Kane was dropping deeper. It wasn't working for many reasons. And essentially, we've got Lucas in a key position, essentially doing nothing. I mean, he achieved nothing in that game. I like Lucas. I think he's been at the club already longer than I thought he would be. I thought he'd be gone a window or two ago. And he did really, really well at the back end of last season. And I liked him in the Champions League. But he's not a starter in the team we want to become.
I think Lucas is great once he's on the ball. You know, and he shows off his speed, he shows off his ridiculous change of direction, he shows off his ability to finish from all kinds of angles, but he's not good at getting himself on the ball. He needs to be fed it. And if he's playing in a congested box of 20 people, he's not going to get the ball, is he?
And like you said, the same goes for Son. In all of those things you said, I would say that they apply to Son.
Yeah, I completely agree. Both Son and Lucas are almost very kind of reactive players. They're players that will conjure something or just do something, but it's normally something that they create for themselves. And against a team closing up space and not giving any kind of movement, they do just deny that. They do deny the space to Kane and somewhat a creator, kind of like a Lamella player. So when the two of them work against a team that sits deep, it just doesn't function properly.
So to try and focus on some positives and to think how this might be fixed going forward, I like to assume that this team selection was based purely on factors beyond Pochettino's control,
sure,
i.e.
yeah,
fitness or the Eriksen situation. And, you know, he spent the summer signing players who do jobs that he thinks he needs in his side, and we were without all of them for this game. So we weren't able to call upon Tongi, we weren't able to call upon Lo Celso, we didn't have Sessegnon. So he's kind of restricted to, like we said, last season's midfield, which was a bad midfield. And things will get better once we get players fit. And, you know, if Eriksen stays, then brilliant.
Yeah, it's not like Pochettino has forgotten like the fundamental principles of football that he's been instilling in this team for several years. It's not like he suddenly doesn't believe that you need a playmaker against a low block. You know, this isn't... someone asked me, I can't remember who, but someone asked me, like, do you think that Pochettino sort of going into Mourinho phase, do you think that his ideas are beginning to expire on the game and it's developing without him? It's like, well, not really. This is still a low block, the same thing that we face sort of three out of every four games in the Premier League. It's just the players that we have available at the moment, that's it.
Sure. Sure. So let's briefly step away from tactics and think about how we got over that match. Simon says, so it's Simon underscore says, says 93, says, what makes the pain go away? Bardi, what did you do to get over this match?
I had a lot of Beavertown beer, which was probably unadvisable considering I was quite emotional and everything else. But that's how I got through Saturday night.
Nathan, how about you?
I just sort of think more long term. I try not to focus on the individual games, and I try to think of the, you know, the full journey. I don't know I'm really into fitness at the moment. That's my distraction. I'm continuing to improve my running, catch up with Bardi eventually, maybe, probably not. Okay, and lose weight.
I'm somewhat ashamed to say I went down the alcohol route too, and had a bottle of white to myself. And also so I've got an allotment. I don't talk about it as much as I probably should. And so there's been a national shortage of cauliflowers, but me and my girlfriend have managed to grow like shitloads of cauliflower. So at the weekend, we made this Mexican cauliflower recipe with...
hell yeah.
It was awesome. So you marinate it, you chop it, and then marinate it in like a chipotle sauce. And yeah, it was incredible. Then I put like chili flakes and lime zest on it and had it with sour cream. And it was excellent. So that's how the pain went away for me.
When you said there was a national shortage of cauliflowers, I thought you were going to say that the government turned up at your allotment.
Impounded them.
Impounded. They took your cauliflowers away and said, we need this for the country. And then just left you there with nothing but an empty allotment.
We've got like 15. They wouldn't go that far, but we've done well. Okay, back to the tactics. Dominic Sibley says, what's happened to the press? We seem so lethargic and slow on the ball. Nathan, you've spoken about the press before and how we've kind of evolved. What do you think is the reason for us not pressing at the moment?
Yeah, I've seen a lot of criticism about our pressing over the last couple of games, and I know that you've joined in with that as well, but like, I'm not that worried. Like, part of the reason we have 80%, okay, yes, because we pass around in front of their first line of defence and don't make anything back, but part of the reason that we had 80% is because we did press quite decently, I thought, most of the time. I'm not worried, and also it works around secretly as well, as in you don't see us doing any pressing if we've got the ball all the time, you know. Yeah. I'm not worried about our pressing, and maybe there's also a small beginning of the season fitness thing. I'm not worried about that element of our game.
Yeah, I agree. I thought we actually started the game off with some pretty decent pressing. I was thinking, oh hello, we've gone back to our old style. But I think it's a situational thing. I think, like you say, 80% of the ball means you don't need to press so much, plus personnel, as we discussed, and fitness. Garrett Baker says, incision, pace, guile, deftness, zip, cohesion, how do we get it all back? Bardi, what's got to click to make us get back to what we once were?
I think we saw a little bit of that when Lo Celso came on, because it was the first time when he did the through ball to Kane, when Kane got brought down in the second half of the VAR check. That was probably the first kind of smart pass we'd played all game. So it's there. As Nathan said, if we get the playmakers on the pitch and the players who understand how to get the ball into those situations, it's fine. It will come back. It's just a case of getting those players on the pitch again.
You've touched on the VAR situation there, and I wasn't going to talk about it because I feel like it's been done to death. But just briefly, Bardi, what were your feelings on that situation?
It wasn't a clear and obvious error. Kind of like
I think it was too.
I don't know, man. Like the Man City one where Lamella pulled down Rodri. It was one of those where the referee didn't feel that it was a penalty, and then it was almost like VAR didn't want to undermine the referee, and it was kind of that situation again where the penalty would normally have been given. Another referee other than Mike Dean,
he didn't see it. He said he didn't see it.
Yeah, that's what Kane said. Kane said Mike Dean said he didn't see it clearly, wasn't sure, so left it to VAR, and then VAR said we don't want to disagree with the ref. So there's a real communication issue there, isn't there?
I think there's a problem here where VAR is happy to take the lead when there's a handball or an offside where it's black or white. But I think at the moment it seems unwilling to overturn the referee or give a decision which goes against the referee. So I think it needs a little bit of fine tuning there.
I agree with you. I think that is why it wasn't given. I'm interested to know whether they knew that Mike Dean didn't see it. But also, from my perspective, that was clear and obvious. Like that, he rugby tackled him in the knee, basically. Yeah. I mean, Lascelles was falling over, sure, but he made himself fall over in a different way to the way he would have naturally fallen over, so that he could take Kane down. And like, that is the most cynical. I mean, that's a sending off as well as a penalty in my eyes. He hasn't tried to play the ball. He should go for that. That's like a professional foul. Maybe I'm seeing this through lily white glasses. I don't know, but that was my take on it.
I tweeted a picture. So go on, buddy. Go on.
No, I you like sending players off. That's that's historic. We can go back through all the hours of recording, and you would have sent off half the players in the world. I think it was clumsy. Yeah, but Kane knew it was coming. Kane let it come, and it was a penalty. But I can understand why it wasn't given. I don't think it was that clear. I thought the Sun one was clearer because it was a slide tackle that came through the legs, never got the ball, and I thought that was a penalty more than I thought Kane was.
Interesting. Nate, what were you going to say?
I tweeted a picture of the Kane what should have been penalty, and I didn't like pay much attention to the image itself. I just wanted to capture the moment to sort of discuss it, and Arsenal fans got hold of it and I got a billion quote tweets and I just muted the tweet because some big Arsenal account quote tweeted it to complain about Kane's diving. And if you look at the picture, like it doesn't look good on Kane, but like it didn't even begin to occur to me the possibility that that could be viewed as a dive and not like a low single leg takedown.
Right, exactly. I mean, Kane is famed for exaggerating his fall.
Sure.
And for creating contact where there wasn't necessarily going to be contact before. But this was not one of those occasions, in my opinion. Like, Lascelles knows exactly what he's doing, and he got the exact outcome he hoped for, and that really annoys me. He's got to go for that. Anyway, more questions, because there were loads of them. So, a quick one. We had loads of questions on Davinson Sanchez. So, Nicholas Calvert, Kenneth, who's Call Me Kenneth, and 55th Vin, all asked after Sanchez. Nathan, are you worried about Sanchez? Is this a systemic issue? Is this purely a problem because we haven't got a viable midfield at the moment? What's going on?
I'm a tiny bit worried, but like as we've said before, he's young, he's clearly very talented, and yeah, there are big systemic issues that are exposing him, and I think that once the team is in a better place, we will cover up some of his issues. And people will say, well, if he's got issues, you know, that's a big problem. He's not a great centre back. But like all great players are supported, or most great players who are deemed great currently are supported by the teammates and have their weaknesses shielded. Right? Messi isn't great in the air, so Barca don't cross the ball up above him all the time. You know, Davinson's not having a great time. I would like to see Vertonghen play some football. But I'm not too worried. Like it'll go away, I'm sure.
It would feel like a massive knock to Davinson's confidence to like bring Vertonghen back in for the Arsenal game, but at the same time, bring Vertonghen back in for the Arsenal game.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
So next question is from John, who is John and lots of numbers on Twitter. He says, we have players out or just backs like Son and Ali, and new signings still to be integrated in Ndombele and Lascelles. So the opportunity to improve is great. Roll forward 10 matches. What is our best first 11 to achieve that improvement? So Bardi, what do you think the main changes will be from the 11 we saw against Newcastle for in say 10 matches time? What do you think the team will look like?
Before the season started, I thought we were 4-4-3. I thought that was going to be us.
But 4-3-3.
Then after, yeah, that's what I said. No,
4-4-3.
Maybe that's what we need. We need more players. I think after seeing Ndombele play so well in the two, I think 4-2-3-1 is where we're heading. And I think with Dele, Son, and Lo Celso Eriksen combination behind Kane, I think that's where we're going with that.
How about you, Nathan? What do you... it's difficult to tell because with the lack of information we have at the moment, we're only three games in. We've tried different things in each of these games. We've had injuries for each of them. But what are you thinking he's leaning towards at the moment?
It's hard to tell. And I think the biggest factor is Eriksen. I don't know whether he's staying or not. I did tweet a few weeks ago sort of four possibilities, two if Eriksen stays and two if he goes. And I think... the main choice is is whether Ndombele and Lo Celso can play together as a two, and then therefore a 4-2-3-1, or whether you have to have Winks behind them, and therefore, if Winks is behind them, then you have to lose an attacker, which is probably going to be Sun, to keep Dele and Eriksen in the 11, basically.
Interesting. Okay, so we're going to move on to Arsenal, and we'll do that with a question specifically about this game from Daniel Platt, who is Voodoo Chopsticks. He says, I'm an incurable optimist, but do you think we're in a better position to deal with Arsenal away now because we got beat by Newcastle? The team is angry and looking to prove something on the training pitch rather than us scoring two late goals and going on in the same way. Bardi, do you feel like we've got more chance of beating Arsenal because we lost to Newcastle?
I had beers with Daniel maybe a couple of years ago now in Sweden, and he is an optimist. And when you were reading that out, it did make me smile, because I like the fact that normally we're the favourites, and that's always that was a bad thing, because we're going to smash them. But now all of a sudden we're really worried, and now that's a good thing. So I do like the way he's looking at it. I don't know, it's the North London derby, and I always feel ill when I think about these games, because if we win, it's incredible, and if we lose, you know, the scope of feelings, the range of feelings is so big, so it's always bad. But I watched how Liverpool played against them, and if Tottenham decide to start pressing, we can have a lot of joy there. So I'm in a good place when it comes to this game.
Sure. And I think, like we said, there's a lack of information about Spurs at the moment. There's also a lack of information about Arsenal. We don't quite know what they are this season as yet. They're bedding in some new players. They're dealing with some injuries themselves. They don't quite know their best team. Having said that, I do feel they look more cohesive than what I expected them to look at this point. Liverpool destroyed them, sure, but they actually look like a team at points in that game, and at stages of last season they didn't look like a team, and I do fear that they're going to improve on last year. Nathan, what have you made of Arsenal so far?
I haven't watched a ton of them this season, other than the Liverpool game, which is obviously not a great example of any team when they play Liverpool. But I've rated Emery for quite a while. I do think that they will continue to improve, and I think Pepe looks really impressive. It's a matter of making sure that we get ourselves into a better place and keep ourselves above them, because they are they're going to put the pressure on us.
Sure.
I've watched every single one of their games. Somehow every season I always almost watch as many Arsenal matches as I do Tottenham, and they look a little bit better, but they're not the greatest team. Luiz is not an improvement to their defence. Bellerin is not there, so they can be got at. It's a match between two teams who have proper weaknesses and issues to solve. And perhaps us playing each other now, before it all settles down and each team gets in the rhythm, I think perhaps that might just give us the edge in this game.
I wonder, Nathan, is this one of those rare occasions where playing Son and Lucas together might be viable, given David Luiz's propensity to get absolutely outstripped on the counter?
Quite possibly, yeah. I mean, this is the funny thing of the pattern we've been having, right? We had the Aston Villa game. We said, well, Eriksen needs to start games. He started against City, a team who don't do any defending because they have all of the ball, and Eriksen looked terrible. And then we played Newcastle, and we knew Eriksen was playing against a defensive side, and now again we're going into a big game, right? You don't necessarily need the playmaker, unless you think Arsenal are going to set up in a parked bus. It seems pretty unlikely. You don't necessarily desperately need your playmaker for that. That's one where you can, yeah, play your two speedsters, play Lamella, who's a more direct sort of interpretation of a creative player, and go at them that way. Yes, contrary to everything we said, you don't necessarily need Eriksen for this one. This one you can go at them. On David Luiz particularly, right? But a few months ago, I was arguing with some friends about Harry Maguire, who they said is definitely a top 10 centre-back in the league. And I said, oh, I don't know, I think it's kind of close. They said, name 10 centre-backs who are better than him. And my 10th option was David Luiz. And then he transferred to Arsenal. And now I'm like, oh, shit, I've got to stick with it. I've got to say that he's good.
You got to double down.
Should have. I think key to this will be Dele, because last time we played at the Emirates when we beat him 2-0, his movement and his understanding of how we play was key. He got an assist and a beautiful goal. And rather than Lucas, if Son's ready, play, and Dele's ready, I'd play Dele, a combination of Dele, Son and Kane. I think that would be the way I'd go for this.
I definitely think Dele being back will be pivotal.
Huge.
I'm really excited to have him back in the team. But having said that, like the team we selected to play Newcastle would be fine for Arsenal, in my opinion, but wasn't fine for Newcastle.
Yeah,
I don't know. Because Arsenal will press us. I suppose Sissoko can kind of get himself out of trouble. I did want to talk about Sissoko for a second and the fact that we're now talking about him at right back for this game.
Oh, God, yeah.
And I think part of that reason is because when we were playing against Newcastle, they were sat so deep that the skills and the qualities that Sissoko has, they didn't exist. It was impossible for him. But as soon as he went to right back, he just had space to charge into and create stuff. And he almost created the equaliser. So I think that's kind of skewed people's view on him as being a possible right back. And that leaves me to, who do we play at right back now, Dier or Sissoko? And that's a decision I don't want to make.
That is an impossible choice. And I think we just have to pray that Walker Peters will recover in time. And if not, then just play Aurier.
Would
you really?
I think so. I'm not saying that Sissoko is like a good or guaranteed good right back, but I've had enough of Serge Aurier in my life.
Yeah, no, I can empathise with that position. I just don't think Sissoko is positionally sound enough to play right back. He needs too much freedom to do Sissoko things, and I think he wouldn't get that in this game. I must say I'm slightly nervous of Pepe. He actually made Van Dijk look less good than Van Dijk is at times.
Windy, don't be one of these people. Don't believe this hype.
He's pretty good.
he's decent.
He didn't make Van Dijk look ordinary. He did a dribble. He successfully completed a dribble against Van Dijk. And now everybody's taking it that he's Pelé. It happens. Centre-backs get dribbled up past. And eventually it was going to happen. And it just happened that the gods of football decided it was going to be Pepe. That's it. He's a fine player. He's got a bit of skill and everything else. But just because he was the one that broke the duck doesn't mean that he's Jesus, you know?
I do agree. And I think if we had a like settled, solid defence, I'd feel fine about it. But him playing that kind of advanced four position on the right means that he'll be directly up against the Rose Sanchez channel, which has been our weak point this season. And for that reason, I would be very tempted to play Ben Davies. I know he's not everyone's favourite player, but I just feel he's a more steady defender than Danny Rose, and might help Sanchez feel a bit more calm if he plays ahead of Vertonghen again.
I believe in that opinion.
You would play Ben Davies as
well?
Ben
Davies, yeah.
And that takes a lot for you to say it, because you're like Rose's biggest cheerleader.
Yeah, he hasn't been good this season. I'm not ready to sell him out, but I'm still Danny Rose for life, but he hasn't been good this year. Mm.
Yeah, he needs to kind of come out of the team while he finds his form again. He's not a terrible player by any stretch. He just has looked very ropey. Okay, we're going to finish on a great email we got from Joel Brooks with the subject, a worried Spurs fan. If you want to email us, you can do at podcast@theextrainch.co.uk. Joel writes lots of things, but starts off with, "I love Poch, but I'm a bit miffed with him. And I've broken his key points down to three questions. The first is, we don't blow teams away like City and Liverpool and teams have sussed us out. Is this a problem? Nathan, are you concerned that we've been sussed out as such? And also, he makes a good point in his email, Joel. City and Liverpool consistently seem to blow teams away and we don't. Is that a problem?
Teams aren't doing anything new against us that they haven't been doing all along. Like, Newcastle didn't do anything special or clever. They just set up the right way for that context. And as we were saying before, and as I said on Twitter, like, we are historically really good against teams that set up that way. We just didn't have Eriksen on the pitch and we didn't really have the midfielders that we wanted. But I'm sure that we will again. I don't think anyone sussed us out. I don't think that there's a systemic issue.
And I'm confident that if teams do set us out, we can reinvent ourselves again, because Poch is that good. It just needs the full squad to be fit so that he can do that.
It also took Liverpool like 3 years to be able to get themselves in position where they can regularly blow away small sides.
True. And lots of expenditure. So, you know, we've only just started our expenditure comparatively. Next question. What's Pochettino's game with the unsettled squad business? Bardi, what did you make of these post-match comments from Pochettino talking about the squad being the most unsettled he's known it since he arrived at Spurs?
I said on the Fighting Cock yesterday, I kind of wish he would just go back to his normal responses to questions and just and stop trying to be clever, stop trying to play games, just give a normal bog standard response, because I don't understand what his game is. What's the point in saying this? What's he trying to achieve other than cause more disharmony? He's better off just saying it was unlucky, we played well, it wasn't our day.
It felt like deflection to me. That's the only thing I can put it down to. And I presume he must be referring to players like Eriksen, Wanyama, Aurier, yeah. who are probably looking to move clubs. And also the incident, whatever's happened with Vertonghen, where he's been left out of the team. He's not liked being left out of the team, so he's then been left out of the squad. Black eye. So there were some rumours around there were rumours that he'd had a massive row with Poch. There were rumours he'd had a massive row with Kane. Maybe he banged his head in the door. I don't know. It's probably something simple. Maybe his child punched him in the face. I don't know. Nathan, the last one is for you. Is this the beginning of the end? Joel says, this all feels like the start of a goodbye. Alison Rudd at the time said that Poch is starting to sound like Mourinho. I don't disagree.
Yeah, he's been saying some weird things, and maybe it is, like you said a second ago, that sort of distraction technique that Mourinho is the absolute big fish at. When his team loses, he comes out and says some crap, and everyone talks about just the nonsense he's been spewing. I don't... If Pochettino is trying to do that, I don't think he's doing as good a job. I think he's being more honest than he should to play that game. I don't know, it's really hard to get reads on what he's... The other day, someone asked him about experimentation, and then he went off on one about like how they're not scientists and you shouldn't compare football managers to chemists. And it's like, what are you talking... I know that there's a language barrier issue there, but it's like, what are you talking about, mate? I don't think this is the beginning of the end. I do think in the case of Mourinho, his tactical ideas are based on creating counterattack situations, even against sides who don't want to fall into that situation, by manipulating the scoreline and relying on player talent in a bigger way than we do. And I think that Pochettino's tactical ideas are still extremely valid and will be for several more years.
I remember when we podcasted with Jack Pitbrook, he told us that Pochettino has an ego and likes the sound of his own voice. And I feel that this is coming to the fore more and more now. So when we first got Pochettino, he would give these very bland, boring press conferences. And I was all about that. I loved it. He didn't say anything. He was a company man. He towed the party line. He respected Levy. And I was here for that. I loved it. Over time, he's started talking more openly. He's been sort of slightly critical of the club's methods, particularly in regards to the transfers. And he's kind of called on Levy to do things differently within the last 6 months. And I think that is simply a case of him having grown in his role. He's achieved something now. So he's got to the Champions League final. He does feel like he belongs in the talk of the best managers in the league. He's got an ego. He fancies himself a bit. He feels that he's got something to say and something to offer. And so we're getting more from him. And I don't think it's anything more than that. I'm not worried about him losing the plot or going full Jose. I just think he's always had a bit of an ego. It's coming to the surface more now. We just have to accept that he can be a bit like this. He's still a wonderful manager. I've no doubt about that. I still think he's probably a very good man manager as well. And I think this is a blip. I think we'll be absolutely fine. I'm not going to lie. I'm a little disappointed with the start of the season, because I thought we'd finish second this year. And although we're only three games in, I'm starting to sort of revise that opinion. And I think Liverpool look great and we don't look as good as them. But I still think we'll finish third. Is that a positive note to end on?
I think so. I think that he has every reason to have an ego, by the way. Like, he really is one of the best managers in the world. And aside from anything else, you should have a realistic understanding of your own skills. And if realistically you are one of the best managers in the world, that's going to affect how you talk about yourself, you know?
And that's not necessarily a bad thing. I sort of made it sound like I was being critical, but actually, when you are in a powerful position, having a sense of your own importance can be a good thing if it's presented in the right way. He's got to get that squad settled and got to get them on side, but when he does, we've got some good players and we'll be fine. Good chat, lads. Good chat. Are we feeling broadly positive about the Arsenal match?
If anything can fix football, beating Arsenal can.
That's true.
Let's do them.
Do them.
Cool. All right. Until next time.
You've been listening to The Extra Inch. Thanks to Nathan A. Clark for production. Thanks to Bardi for being Italian. Thanks to Adam Gardner for the artwork. Thanks to David Lindner for our intro music. You can find him on Twitter @DavyShambles and his SoundCloud, Dave Lindner. Do check him out. He's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us via podcast@theextrainch.co.uk and subscribe via your usual podcast platforms. And if you do enjoy the podcast, consider leaving us a rating and review. That would really help.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.